your work life, all of our work lives. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
As full-time benefited jobs are increasingly held mainly by government employees and by stars in the private sector, normal people, fearful of or sick of having to try to make their living in the insecure gig economy, are starting their own business. Yeah, it's risky, but if done well and the stars align, that promises more security because no one can fire you. To help boost the chances of success of would-be entrepreneurs, self-employed people, and current self-employed people is the Small Business Administration. And with me in the studio to describe some ways that the SBA can help you is the SBA's San Francisco District Director, Julie Klaus. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you, Marty. Thank you so much for having me tonight.
It really is a pleasure. We've had a lovely conversation before we even started. So sweet. Hopefully we didn't say, do our best talking before we got on the air.
Oh, we've got lots of things to talk about.
Oh, so that's the spirit.
I'm excited.
That's great. Okay. Well, you know, people love stories. Can you tell me a success story or two about a person who wanted to be self-employed, used SBA services extensively, and now is running a successful small business?
Yeah, I have a great story of actually a young entrepreneur, a woman in North Bay, and she, stereotypically, I guess, loves shopping. So she struggled to find clothes she liked at prices she could afford in her community. So she decided to start her own boutique. And she started online first, but then got tapped into our small business development centers for some free counseling and training. Mm-hmm. And then with a microloan, was actually able to open her first brick-and-mortar site. And so she's about 3 years in, running strong, opened up a second location, is also selling online. And she's only 23 years old.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
She's having fun and fulfilling her dreams and is loving every minute of it.
See, I love that because, you know, I've had clients come to me and wanting to be, you know, open a boutique. And I say, there's a boutique under every block. It's, you know, again, to use a stereotype, it's normally like a plaything for, you know, wives of rich husbands who say, here, it takes $100,000, start your business, and then go out of business in 2 years. But it's nice to hear a real success story. You got one more for me.
I do. I think there's another great story. It's actually our California Small Business Person of the Year this year. Started small, was in the food service industry and wanted a food truck. It was a very nascent industry here in San Francisco at that time, and he really helped build up that industry. And now he's he owns a couple food trucks. He networks all the food trucks. He creates experiences, if you will, with food and entertainment and fun and bringing.
Can you give me an example of food? I mean, food trucks seems like, you know, Roach Coach. I like the stuff. I like the food. But, you know, experience, I wouldn't go that far. Do you know what kind of experiences they create?
Sure. I mean, there are standing days where you can go to a designated spot like Presidio Park, and there'll be, you know, maybe 30 different food trucks. There'll be picnic tables around. There'll be music and entertainment. Oh. You can bring your family. You can come with your neighbors. Everybody can get the food they like and then come back and enjoy it together.
Sounds like a food court, but outside.
Yeah, and so to reconnect people and have fun.
Perfect. Okay. Now, you know, everybody's always wondering, you know, what kind of, they're attracted to self-employment. They want to give the finger to the boss and they say, I want to be self-employed. But they're so nervous. Are there any kind of categories of small businesses that you're seeing trending, doing well?
I think we see success in a lot of industries. One thing I think is really unique, and it was interesting to me, is here even in San Francisco, manufacturing is making a resurgence.
I would you say the word manufacturing, the word that comes to mind is China,
right.
Not San Francisco.
Right, we think of offshore, we think of
absolutely,
lots of things.
Exactly. Well, tell me more about that.
It's a little bit of everything. You know, it's specialty food items. It's clothing. There's a resurgence in some designers here in San Francisco. And they're leveraging, even able to tap into some resources from New York and L.A. to help support the industry here. It's making of things. It's artisans. It's across the board. It's
really interesting. I think of Maker Faires where they make these stupid little plastic items, but you're not talking about that. Does the SBA do anything to help people who are in manufacturing?
Well, almost all of our programs and services lend themselves well to manufacturers. We, you know, the different kinds of financing programs we offer, the free business counseling. I think for anybody, that is like, I think the most valuable thing we offer.
Lay that out to me. I know about SCORE, which is the retired executives doing it, but that's not what you're talking about. You talk about small business development centers. Talk to me. Let's say I came to you and I say, I want to start a business and I want to do 3D manufacturing, but I want to do something that people, that maybe businesses are going to buy. What are you going to do for me?
So I always tell people, connect with your local small business development center, or you know, even women's business centers. We've got a variety of resources. Because make an appointment with a counselor. It's free, which the price is right.
Taxpayer pays for it.
Yes. And you can the nice thing is you can come down, go in, meet with your counselor. It's free. It's confidential, one-on-one counseling.
Wow.
And you lay out what you want to do.
One time, or is it an ongoing thing?
Oh, you can go one time, you can go 100 times.
Jesus.
It will always be free. And, you know, if you're really serious about what you want to do and you either want to start up or you're looking for growth opportunities, you can develop that relationship. And here's a free business advisor for
you. Are they accessible? Is it like 6 month wait to get to talk to somebody?
No. I mean, I think right now a lot of centers, from the intake to the time you see a counselor, is maybe 1 to 2 weeks.
Nothing.
Yeah.
And how qualified, I mean, to get that kind of thing free, it's like gold. How do these people who are these counselors, advisors, whatever, how are they selected? How good are they really?
There's in the Northern California, the model that this group follows is there's a lead center that has one or two full-time counselors, and then they have this vast network of part-time counselors that are some of them are very industry-specific or have great knowledge and expertise in a particular area. And so what they'll try to do is match you.
I see.
With whether it's industry or whether it's a need you have. Maybe you need to sit down with a CPA because you're struggling with your finances, or it's targeted. So with assessing what you need, that's why we have an intake process, and then matching you with the proper resources.
I don't want to wait another moment. So if I imagine there's some people listening whose saliva is coming out of the sides of their mouths, and they're saying, okay, how do I make this happen? What do they do to get access to this?
So they can I go into any search engine and type in Small Business Development Center. They'll probably pop up. Or you can always check our website, sba.gov. We're very easy to find. Or call our offices here in San Francisco. And no matter where you are, Bay Area and beyond, we can match you with your local resource.
I think we need to go to the phones and give my salivating listeners a chance to ask you a question.
Sure.
So if you are somebody contemplating going into business, well, you already are there and could use a little helping hand. And we've got the right person here. This is Work with Marty Nemko, and I am talking with Julie Klaus. She is the San Francisco District Director of the Small Business Administration. The phone number, if you'd like to ask her a question, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Apart from the counseling, I'm going to keep going to the well till it runs dry. What's another service or program that you want to make sure our listeners really hear about?
Well, I think what people associate with SBA and what there is money, right?
Right.
Financing.
Loans.
But what I think people don't realize is the depth of financial products and services that we offer. Everything from micro lending, $50,000 or less, all the way up through the venture capital world.
No. I don't understand how venture capital, I think about these guys sitting in Silicon Valley and they're charging out usurious rates. How does the Small Business Administration and venture capital hook up together?
Right. It's a partnership, public-private partnership. So we license existing venture capital firms, and we provide some guaranteed financing to them. So we leverage private dollars and public dollars to target small businesses specifically. If they're in our program and they're licensed, they become what we call a small business investment company. And they can only use our resources, our financial resources, to invest in small businesses. Mm-hmm. And we've had some amazing successes come out of this program.
Tell me one.
We probably have a device sitting around here, a little company called Apple.
That was a result of a small business? Back in the Steve Wozniak days in the 70s.
So,
you know, I had a white male client tell me he was, I don't know if I can say the word, so I'll just say angry at the SBA, because he sees a lot of white males struggling, and there are all these set-aside loans for women and for minorities, 8B, 8C, whatever. What would you say to that guy?
Well, statistically speaking, that's actually not correct. But also, our programs have changed through the years. And today, the programs are not based on gender, race, ethnicity,
or anything
like that. It is a small business, what your financing need. And the programs are really designed more about the financing needs of a business rather than who owns the
business. That come about because of Donald Trump, or is that was that extant before that?
That started probably back in the 80s, actually, and it's changed through the years.
Okay.
Like we're no longer a direct lender. We do guarantee loans, and we use third-party resources. So things have been changing through the years.
Fair enough. Now, are there any resources that are specific to – no, before I get to that, actually – one of the things that daunt a lot of would-be small business owners is the business plan. And I know San Francisco Renaissance and about they make you go through 14 weeks to develop a business plan. How, from your perspective, how important is the business plan, and to what extent does the SBA facilitate creating one?
Yeah, I think of it a little differently than the traditional model. I think of a business plan as a dynamic tool. And I think you're never actually done with your business plan if you're being thoughtful about it. But I do think it's important to sit down and think about what you want to do. And then I think the plan is contextual. So if you are going to go for financing, for example, the package you put together and the information you assemble is going to look a little different than, let's say, you've been in business for years and now you're looking more strategically at your growth. Your strategic business plan is going to look a little different. So I don't follow any one model or one prescription. I tell people sometimes I think your business plan is your file cabinet and we'll go in and pick out what we need out of it. But there's lots of resources, the counselors we mentioned, or you go online and probably find a half a dozen really good templates if you just want a model of what to think about and what to document.
What do you think about, I'm just running a semi-contrarian idea by you. We've all probably heard that Burger King started on the back of literally on the back of a napkin. Two guys were out and getting a cup of coffee, and they just decided to do it. Supporting that notion is the following. Any business idea that is so marginal as to require all of that fine-tuning to make it work, is there's going to be too many things that can go wrong. You want a business that's so clearly a win that you don't even need a business plan. So, for example, I'll just give you a silly one. I happen to know that eyeglass frames, that people pay $50, $100, $200 for the frames, cost 5 cents to make. And 25 cents for the license from some fancy, Dolce & Gabbana or whatever. Mm-hmm. Right? So the margins are huge. And if I were to try to start that business, I simply go to independent, not the big chains, because they're not going to deal with me. Right. But if I simply go to a half a dozen local optometrist firms and I said, how much are you paying for your frames? And I say $10, $15, $25. I say, what if I can get you for $5? And if I got relatively consistent yeses, I wouldn't write any business plan. I would simply try to find great. I would look at the windows of those optometry places and get a sense of what people are buying now, because what those optometrists are doing, they put into the windows what's likely to sell the most. And then I go and I find out where I can get similar styles of reasonable quality. This is not like electronic. This is not the Apple computer. These are pretty basic pot metal and a couple of little hinges. I find out where I can get a supply of those for 10 or 25 cents, and I do. I have no risk at all. I'm doing it out of my house. Is that a crazy idea from you're a professional at this, at small business and business plans? Am I crazy to be thinking that most businesses like that, the right filter is it shouldn't require a business plan. It should be so clearly profit-centered while still being ethical that you don't need a business plan. Is that crazy?
Well, I think, today, yeah, you can prop it up, but where are you going to go with that business? Did you get all the right licenses? Did you sit and think about how you're going to differentiate yourself? So you've got these, 10 clients right off the bat. Awesome. Amazing. Get you started, right? You want to grow. Are you going to need some money? If you're going to need some money from someone, you're probably going to have to show them something.
What if I said, look, I'll follow all the legal rules, I'll get all the licenses or whatever, but if I want to go scalable, and once I establish my 10 or 20 or, there's on College Avenue, where I live, there's about 12 optometry places on College Avenue alone. And in the, within 10 miles of my house, there's probably 100. So I hire a kid at $15 an hour to go door to door and give him commission as well. And once I've got the model working well, I simply open another in another big city that maybe isn't so sophisticated, Kansas City or something, and I find somebody to run it there. And I simply use the money that I made from the first location, what I made in San Francisco, to fund the next. Anything wrong with that?
Nothing wrong with it. I mean, a lot of people probably do it. And, you know, there's not a requirement that you have to write a business plan. You know, the city's not going to come knocking on your door and say, where's your business plan? But I also have found with a lot of businesses that it's a learning experience. And they are like, you know what, I learned a lot and I discovered some things. And I this is what I thought I wanted to do. When I sat down and actually thought about it, I thought, you know what, no, I actually want to tweak it a little or I want to change it. And so I think it's a really good process. And I've not had anybody come back to me in like 20 plus years of doing this and saying, gosh, that was so worthless. Okay. They usually say, you know what, I was dreading it. I thought you were, you know, being mean to make me sit down and do this, but I actually got something out of this process.
I'm going to want to ask you about the ultimate customer, the government. Everybody dreams of having the government as a customer. They see $85 hammers in their eyes. But I first want to give out the phone number. If you have a question for Julie Klaus, I'm talking about the Small Business Administration and what it can do for would-be and up-and-running small businesses. If you've got a question for her, this is a good time to call the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now, let's say I'm selling hammers or whatever. You know, I've got a great source of hammers, and there's something called some compliant thing for a government that has to meet a certain standard. What is that called? For product, you know? I don't know.
Oh, it depends. Yeah. There are these standards.
Yeah. Okay. Right. It meets the government standard for hammers. And now I want to be a government contractor. Can the Small Business Administration help me so that I can indeed sell to that wonderful customer, the government?
Absolutely. That's one of our core programs. You know, as you know, government spends billions and billions of dollars a year. And one of our main tenets is to make sure small businesses get their fair share of that pie. 23% at a minimum, to be exact. And we, small little agency that we are, this is the one instance where we can go beat up on our big brothers and sisters out there and say, hey, you're not spending enough with small businesses. You need to create more opportunities for small businesses. You need to put these contracts aside and let them compete. And so we have different certification programs, which is great because if you are certified by us, then you can compete amongst
exactly.
your fellow peers. So rather than you going out there and competing in full competition against, you know, the Lockheed Martins and the Boeings of the world, you're competing against your peers of small businesses in whatever category you're in.
So and how hard is that to get? You know, is there a huge amount of paperwork? Is there a long back? You know, I'm walking into you again. You're my counselor at the Small Business Development Center, and I'm saying, oh my God, I want to sell my hammers to the government. How much do I have to go through so that I'm actually going to be able to submit a bid and likely to actually get a bid?
Yes. Yep. I will say contracting is not for the faint of heart.
Tell me more.
There is paperwork, of course. No getting around that. To be certified, there's two programs we have which require an actual application and certification. That's for our 8As, program for socially and economically disadvantaged business owners, and the other is HubZone, which is a place-based areas of high unemployment and low income. And so that is, of course, an application process. There is paperwork. We're going to look at all your info. But once you're admitted to the program, then it's you going out and marketing, and we help you find some of those opportunities and you selling yourself to those purchasing agents.
As it happens, NPR listeners tend to be middle class. And so when we hear hub zones and we hear disadvantaged populations, if I'm a middle class person and I'm middle class because I worked hard my whole life and now I want to take advantage of this, am I not going to be able to be part of these government programs, you know, be a government, get a government, be a contractor to government?
No, I mean, we do have for our 8A program, which is probably our most robust program and offers the most benefits. We look at social and economic disadvantage. And social disadvantage, if you're one of the groups enumerated by Congress, meaning African American, Hispanic American.
Well, that's what I meant. We were talking about earlier, and you said those programs didn't exist.
For financing, but on the contracting side, there is a set aside. It's a set aside.
That's
program.
What I thought. That's what I guess we were referring to. Okay.
And
am I stuck if I'm a middle class white guy? Am I stuck? No. I live in, so what's, you say there's the ADA program, the most robust program is set aside for people of color and people, and then there's the hub zone, which is for the Hunter's View, Bayview, Hunter's Point, Tenderloin.
It's place-based. So, you know, it doesn't, the ownership makeup doesn't matter. It's where the business is located. So
but I've
got
to be located in the Tenderloin or in one of the zones, Hunter's Point. I see.
Easy to find on our website. There's also, you know, just small business is a set aside. There's a set aside category for any small businesses. There's also for veterans, for service disabled veterans.
Small business administration is obviously by definition small business.
Mm-hmm.
But you say there's a set aside for small business. How could that be?
In the contracting space. So that's where the agencies, we go out and say, listen, you need to make sure that there's contracts available and you need to put them in these different buckets. So small mm-hmm. is a bucket, as is women-owned, veteran-owned, service-disabled veteran, 8A and Hub Zone are the primary buckets.
I'm not a libertarian, I'm not, but I have mm-hmm. this friend who's this unbelievably diehard libertarian, and he would say, you know, the free market should, you know, why should small businesses get a set aside? The customer should be able to get the best product at the best price. And so why should there be set asides for small businesses? What would you think?
Well, you know, I do think obviously a lot of larger businesses might be able to sell or produce things at a cheaper price. But that doesn't necessarily mean the quality is better. And so it depends on what's the important factor. I think what's great for small businesses and contracting is that they tend to be more agile and nimble. They don't have the hierarchy and the bureaucracy in a lot of larger organizations. So if a government agency says, I need you to bend and flex and change things up, smaller businesses are usually able to adapt to that and deliver more effectively and efficiently.
Okay. Is there, you know, every single person who's ever been a guest on my show has said to me afterwards, she emails me or whatever and says, oh, damn, I wish I had said that. Here's your chance. Is there one thing you haven't said yet that you want to make sure our listeners hear about?
There's one thing it's a timely topic, unfortunately. And it's the thing that a lot of people don't realize that we do. It's disaster support assistance, so disaster relief efforts. So given the wildfires here in California, to let people know that if they have been affected directly or they have friends or family affected, we have programs. And this is one case where we work with everyone, homeowners, landlords, renters, big business, small business, to try to help you get back on your feet and to cover any uninsured losses.
I have one more question, actually. You know, in the Bay Area, there's a lot of people who are, you know, I'll just say directly hate Donald Trump, and they think that he has cut all kinds of programs and services or whatever. How has the Trump administration affected you? You're the district director of San Francisco. He has a particular enmity to San Francisco, the most liberal place in America. Has the Trump administration hurt services for small businesses in the SBA?
No, we've actually, our core programs have stayed the same. We do see support as for businesses in general. I think small businesses are great. They rally everybody. You know, both sides of the aisle tend to really love small businesses, and how could you not? They're amazing, and they do amazing things for this country. So the support has been there. We sometimes see the focus in making sure that we're looking at different communities. So one of the big focal points has been making sure that we're extending our outreach to rural America and that we're providing the knowledge and the services to people that might not have seen our faces as mm-hmm. often as the people that are in more urban environments.
Right, that was a Trump priority, the rural mm-hmm. population, because that's, again, who voted
but
for
him.
But
our core programs services stayed the same. Our funding mm-hmm. has stayed the same.
Uh-huh.
We've been lucky in that regard.
Uh-huh.
So
uh-huh.
we plan to continue business as usual and try to reach as many businesses as possible.
You know, with guests I like to conclude with changing hats.
Okay.
You know, I'm a career, you asked me what I do during the week. I'm a career counselor, as I mentioned. And every you're not just a representative of the small, but you're a human being. You're Julie Clowes, the woman who lived in Washington, D.C., who a year ago came out to, you know, pretend that I'm your career counselor. Everybody, even if they're happily employed, has some career issue, you know. Their boss, their workload, work-life balance, priorities, skill gaps, whatever. If I were your career counselor, what would be the one issue you'd want to discuss with me?
Oh, geez, that's a good question.
Take a moment.
Yeah, I think a common struggle is the work-life balance. I love what I do, and I love getting out and working with the businesses and meeting people. And since I am newer to the Bay Area, it's been really fun to be out and about. And but that also, you know, means that I'm working until 8 o'clock at night sometimes and starting the next day. But I'm enjoying what I'm doing, so it's.
So do you, could you say that it's fine? I work, my life is utterly out of balance, and I'm happy with it being utterly out of balance. I work 70 hours a week, and I love it. But are you wanting to keep doing that, or would you like to cut it down?
What I would love to do is be able to make sure that we've got such great network and connection and make sure the team is up to speed and really kind of push it out, and so that we're covering all the areas. And maybe I'll do a little bit less running around, but... But I want to really build the network and make sure that we're collaborating and partnering and getting the word out about what we do and what we offer.
So I hear the word less running around. Is there, you know, there's no rigid rules that can be adopted, but is there a rule of thumb that you would like to keep in mind in terms of delegating to people to do more of that running around? Put into words what you think you might want to keep as a rule of thumb so you're not running around as much and not working until 8 every night.
Let's see. I think it's people making sure that my team is feeling well empowered so that they can go out and create the programming and bring in the resources that will help support the small business community with probably a little less hands-on direction from me. Okay. And we're getting there. So we've been here a year, so we're working.
And sometimes there's one or two go-to people who you really want to make sure you delegate to do more of that outreach, and sometimes it's across the board and it's a training issue or whatever. In your particular office, is there one or two go-to guys, go-to gals that you want to particularly empower to be going out, do more outreach, or is it across the board and therefore is a training issue?
We have an interesting dynamic, and we're in a rebuilding phase. So we'll be, you know, in a rare position where I'm actually going to be able to get to hire a few new people. So we're a little bit understaffed at the moment.
Wow.
So I want to build up. And so it's about building up the team and across the board. So across the board, to answer your direct question.
Hiring is the most, you know, every book that's ever been written about leadership says that hiring is the most important thing that a leader does. How good, if you're really being honest with yourself, are you great at hiring great people? Do you have a skill gap that you need to improve your hiring practices? I know that you're constrained to some extent by the government rules and procedures, but in the end, you decide who you want. Where are you with regard to your self-appraisal on your hiring ability?
I think there's always tips and tricks to be learned, but I have, through the last couple of years and being able to hire different individuals, I feel like I've gotten better at it, that's for sure, and learned a little bit more about kinds of questions I want to ask. I kind of usually toss the typical interview questions out the window, and I really want to try to get to, you know, learning more about the person. Are they going to fit in with the culture? Do they have a shared vision? Are they going to have the passion?
I'm going to push back on you. Those questions are still quite standard, and they're easily BS-able.
Mm-hmm.
What tends to work best is the following combination of things. I'm going to give you a two-minute lecture. And you can say, this is all BS, Marty. I don't agree with a single thing. But we're just playing this. Also, will serve my listeners who are in a position.
Oh, always good insight.
Right. Well, it may or may not be. Well, you can tell me, give me the finger.
Okay.
Whatever. But best practice is normally to reach out to every human being who you know, whom you respect, and describe what the key attribute or two that you need in this person. Don't go over it with some huge big job description, because in the end, there's usually one or two core things that end up being the tipper. Because people, you know, they're, unfortunately, as a career counselor, I know how often job applicants are either so highly coached that they sound great in the interview. There is 50% of resumes contain some kind of creative writing.
Mm-hmm.
References are often BS, and you know. So it's really pretty critical that you do some pre-vetting by asking the people you respect, both within and outside the government, for people encouraging them to apply. Step one. Now, of course, you know that can be sometimes exclusionary. So I'm not saying you have to post the ad anyway, so you can see other people. But that's a way of filling at least part of the pipeline with good people. Then, in the interview process, very often what I recommend, and I don't know the federal rules, whether it violates that, in your requirements, ask them a simulation question or two that is a thorny issue that they would face on the job. Of course, in writing, they could hire a hired gun and do it, but that's something of a screen. And then in the interview process, none of those questions about the culture or whatever, that can be totally BS'd. All simulations, almost all simulations of the common yet difficult situations they would face on the job. And then finally, when you've got your top candidate or two, you ask for a half a dozen references. You contact them all, either by phone, leaving voicemail if necessary. And my favorite little trick is this. Nobody says anything bad anymore.
Right.
So you leave the following voicemail after hours. You say, "Hi, I'm Julie Clowes. I'm hiring for a very important position, a person who's got to be great at X and Y. I'm considering Mary Jones. If you think she's awesome, please give me a call. If not, no need to call back." If you leave six of those voicemails, unless you get at least three back, you know you've got the wrong person. That's the world's shortest course in hiring. Was there anything in that that you want to take away as a little Christmas present to you as you walk off this out of here?
I do like that tip about calling after hours and leaving the, you know, the giving them the option of when to call back or not. Because I do feel like, you know, you're going to give a reference for somebody who's going to say nice things about you. Why else would you provide them?
So
that's a great way to think. I'd also like to do that with their supervisor, their most recent supervisor.
Exactly. Well, that's who you really want.
That's who I really want to hear.
That's who
from.
You really want, because anybody can find a reference. It could be their girlfriend.
Right.
You know, when they list their girlfriend, "Oh, yeah, that's my boss." But if you dig and actually find out who the previous bosses were and talk to them or leave those voicemails, you're way ahead of the game. Anyway, that's my tiny little Christmas stocking stuffer for you.
Oh, great. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Well, and thank you very much, Julie Clowes, for being my guest on Work with Marty Nemco.
Thank you, Marty.
She is the district director of the San Francisco District of the Small Business Administration. Just go to sba.gov. It is very accessible, and you can find a range of services. And or Google Small Business Development Center, which is the hub for where you can get all kinds of one-on-one counseling, unlimited. It's pretty damn cool, and a lot of money if needed. So, again, Julie Clowes, thanks very much.
Thank you, Marty.
Take care. You're welcome to stay or duck out, whatever you want.
Okay.
So, now, I talked about stocking stuffers. Well, I'm not, you know, over the radio, it's hard for me to stuff through these electric wires to stuff, you know, send you some chocolate truffles or whatever. But what I've done is I've assembled a lot of quick tips that are, I posted, these are tweets, but they're bite-sized and therefore good for the radio, that I have found particularly helpful related to your career. And so I want to share those with you now. But I first would like to give out the phone number. If you have a question about your work life, whether you are unemployed, well-employed and still unhappy, want to be self-employed, are self-employed and struggling, want to play Shark Tank with me, but I'll be nice, sort of, maybe, who knows. Any kind of work-related problem, I'm here to help. The price is certainly right, zero, zippo, nada. I call them workovers with pummeling rarely involved. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Okay. So, first, I want to tell you a story. This is a today story. It's great. It happened today with a client today. And it's not really directly related to career, but it's close enough, and it has implications for any kind of personal growth in career or out. So, this person has a significant case of social phobia. He's a very, very nice guy, but he is very afraid. He's in his 30s, and he's single, and he would like to get married. But he is always, you know, he gets set up by his friends and he always procrastinates contacting them. And then the women say, "Oh, well, he must be really a loser. He's constantly procrastinating." Well, really, the procrastination is a symptom of him having social anxiety. What he just did and came back with a great report is he went to a speed dating event. And at the speed dating event, the way he did it was he was too scared to even go. So he first said, "Okay, I'm just going to get in the car. Okay, I'm going to drive there. Then I'm going to go and I'm going to look in. Then I'm going to walk into the lobby. And then I'll pay the registration." And then he had 20. He had to have speed dates, 7-minute dates with 20 women within 3 hours. That, what they call, what the therapists call exposure therapy or desensitization. He had to interact. He had no choice. He interacted with 20 women, and while the only person who liked him, he didn't like, but he came to me in today's session. He says, "I'm going again next week." So that notion of the combination of baby steps and desensitization, forcing yourself. He hated it. I was, you know, imitating him with the deep breaths. I don't know if he actually was, you know, taking deep breaths, but he was certainly freaked out. But he pushed his way through it to simple baby steps until he was forced to do it. So with regard to your career, if you are afraid to reach out for an informational interview or for to ask your friends to say you're looking for a job, you're afraid it's going to make you seem like a loser, then it really is a good idea to take those deep breaths, take the little tiny baby steps, realize you can survive. You're not going to lose a right kidney if you do this. The worst thing that happens is you sound stupid and they say, "How dare you call me?" You can survive that. All right, that's my first little stocking stuffer. I'll give out the phone number again, then we're going to go to the phones. If you have a problem with your work life as we're approaching the year-end season and you've either gotten the axe, a lot of times employers want to give the axe right at the end of the year. If you've either gotten it, afraid you're going to get it, or you want, you know, you got a question about a holiday party. You know, it's old news about, you know, we've got a holiday party, office holiday party is no real party. It's another business meeting that where you can drink one drink, and you've got to be on your best behavior because otherwise you lose your job. The era of the old bacchanal is over. So, but if you have any kind of question related to anything related to work life, from holiday parties to unemployment, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Marty. My name is Scott. I'm in San Francisco, and I have a couple comments on your guest, Julie, in the Small Business Administration discussion you just had.
Okay.
I am one of the owners of one of the probably most successful small food business incubators ever since 1984, and we've had hundreds and hundreds of small businesses start and fail at our at our business over the years. And one of the things I think maybe a lot of your listeners and certainly people who will become our customers don't understand about the Small Business Administration is that the Small Business Administration considers the small businesses with up, you know, to several hundred millions of dollars a year in revenue. And most of your listeners, I suppose, and certainly most of the people who approach our business as prospective customers are, you know, micro enterprises. They have little to no capital at all. And the SBA, I'm sure, is helpful to businesses that have, you know, that actually are businesses and have, you know, some substantial revenues and the ability to, you know, borrow and so forth on the basis of their experience and track record and earnings. It's not the case for people who are, you know, starting their very first business with very few resources. And I had hoped to ask Julie from the SBA there if she had any, you know, advice for people such as that. Most of the people listening to this program, you know, aren't in business already. If they're thinking about starting a business, you know, but they don't really have many resources, and there aren't that many resources available to people who have few.
Well, I can only tell you that was the very first question I asked her, and she insisted that somebody who's just starting at ground zero can get, you know, I don't know how much about loans, but two things. First of all, she said there is free counseling available at small business development centers. You can have 100 visits if you want for free with carefully matched people who can counsel you. Two, there is something called the Service Corps of Retired Executives who are retired executives who can help. And then three, there are loans that are available to everybody, not just to women and minorities. She made clear. For startups, and then there are separate set of, now these are, if you want to be a government contractor, there are separate set asides for women and minorities, especially disadvantaged communities or disadvantaged people, have an advantage in getting a government contract. Those are all for would-be startup people with no money required. So I want to thank you for the call. I want to give out the phone number again, and and then move to sharing some more of these what I call stocking stuffers for your career. The phone number, if you've got a work-related problem that you would like my help with, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco and KALW, the price is certainly right, zero, this is my pro bono work, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. The next stocking stuffer, career-related stocking stuffer, quick idea I want to share with you is this. And I fail with this myself miserably, so I'm being a hypocrite and even advocating it because while I tell myself it's a great idea, I don't do it. But if you have it within your wherewithal to do this, to wait a half a second to 1 second after your conversation partner finishes speaking, that conveys that you're considering what they said. You weren't just waiting for them to finish, you could hold forth. And if the complete opposite is interrupting, which, again, I'm totally guilty of doing. But I know that people really appreciate not and feel respected if you don't interrupt them. And if, in fact, you wait a half a second to a second before responding, it's a sign of respect. That's a little stocking stuffer. Another one. It's usually wiser to take low-risk actions than to extensively ruminate. I have had so many successful clients who operate out of the philosophy of ready, fire, aim, not ready, aim, fire. Because after you've fired, you're getting feedback on what's working and not working. And you can make changes and adjust that you could never have conceived of had you been waiting on the sidelines and simply ruminate. So ready, fire, aim is another career stocking stuffer. Another thing, I have been doing a deep dive into book reading lately, and I'm growing a lot. You know, people are messy. You know, you interact with people, and sometimes it's the best thing in the world, and sometimes it's difficult. Unless you're naturally gifted in people relationships, think about the book. It's so underappreciated. It's such a trusty, interesting companion. You know, all of us get boring pretty darn quickly, but really good books. I'm reading Memoirs of a Geisha right now. What a window into life of 1930s Japan, the life of an apprentice geisha, what Japanese culture was like. I am learning so much from that. It was made into a movie, too. I haven't seen it. After I finish reading the book, planning to watch the movie. The book is such a trusty companion. And before that, I was reading A House for Mr. Biswas, which is a book written by V.S. Naipaul, an East Indian, who grew up in Trinidad, and about the life of the Indian community in Trinidad. No, it has no impact whatsoever on my career or counseling at all. But boy, what a trusty companion reading that was. Then I read Herzog, about a brilliant, super intellectual Jew who was in a world of where he was taken advantage of by his three wives, and he was micromanaged by his parents. And again, it just and he was also like in 1950s, 60s, 70s. It opened me into a window of which I had not otherwise experienced. So, you know, the little Christmas stocking stuffer career thing is, don't forget about the book. It's so underappreciated. And my Kindle is my favorite possession these days because I can go, sometimes I'm taking a long hike with my dog and sometimes I'm just enjoying nature, but sometimes I take my Kindle and I'm with, you know, weighs 5 ounces and I'm able to read whatever book I want. It's amazing. And share, let's say I find some quote I like, I simply press share and it's shared with everybody in my network. So there's a tip. All right. Give out the phone number and then we'll go to the phones. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco. If you've got a work-related problem, happy to try to help. 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And to the phones. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hi, Marty. Thanks for the show. My name's Steve.
Hello, Steve.
I used to have a career in computer industry. It was pretty specialized in disaster recovery.
Uh-huh.
And that job dried up a couple of years ago. Now I've picked up a little side job. I'm working in a hardware store. But it means that I haven't been in my main career for over 2 years now.
Okay.
And I'm looking forward to some interviews, still trying. And I'm trying to see how I can address that in an interview so it doesn't come across like, oh, I've just kind of been lame. But instead, you know, I've been waiting it out, trying for the right job.
Okay, good question.
How do I tell them that?
What kind of job are you interviewing for?
It's going to be disaster recovery.
Oh, back
maybe
to that.
Okay. In the banking industry or in just IT stuff, you know, Okay. Preparing the IT for disasters.
Cool. Not to disaster, cool, but yes. So yeah. I know that disaster recovery, with in terms of hard drives or servers or whatever, can be it can be done at a very basic, simple level where you're really not doing very much. And otherwise, you know, there's some real expertise required to go deep dives in those rare occasions. When
that's what I'm looking at. Okay. Yeah, that's what I'm looking at, Mark.
Right. So at the at the bit and byte level where things are corrupted, that's no joke. So you have that deep level expertise?
Yeah.
Okay. And 2 years ago, is your radio on? Can you turn your radio down?
My radio's off.
Oh, it is off? Okay, never mind. We thought...
Make sure I'm closing my door so I can make sure all my radios... All right, is that any better?
Yes, good job.
Okay.
Thanks. So, in general, the whole IT field keeps changing and growing instantly. Have you, in the last 2 years, have there been improvements in the models? Clearly, you say you wanted to be doing enterprise-related disaster recovery like banking. Has the art of disaster recovery or prevention improved significantly in the last 2 years?
It's always improving, yeah.
Good. The best way to prove that you are capable now of being hired is to make a minimal short answer to the question about your hardware store and focus on that you've been learning, that you're absolutely up to speed on the best practices regarding to disaster recovery. So, for example,
right.
They ask you, okay, well, you were doing this for 2 years, and that's all well and good, but then you quit, and you're working a hardware store. What's the deal with that? You say, you can say something like, I was running my own business, it didn't work real well, and an opportunity dropped in my lap, and I learned a lot about a whole new thing. We all, bright people always love learning new things, and I learned a whole lot about the hardware industry, but that said, I've kept up with the latest and most important technologies in disaster prevention, computer disaster prevention and hard disk recovery. For example, I'm aware of this, and I'm aware of that, and I'm aware of that. So you've given a very short answer to the problematic issue, and you've given a more extended answer and a very credible answer to the more core question about whether you really are competent to do the job currently. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes great sense, Marty. Thanks.
It's my pleasure. I'm glad you called Work with Marty Nemko.
Thanks.
Okay, we'll go back to the phones again. I'll give out the phone number if you've got a work-related problem. It certainly doesn't have to be IT. Any kind of work problem counts. 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And back to the phones. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hi, Marty. My name is Vartan, and I am a fellow recruiter. And my question is, how do you build trust with candidates, even though you as an individual are not necessarily the one that is performing the role, but is someone that is recruiting for the role? Because I have a trouble of, like, leading the horse to water but not getting them to drink, even though I provide them the insights and I provide them the, skills that I want them to show, but they just sometimes don't trust me as a recruiter.
Okay.
I feel like you would have some insight on that.
I would. First of all, for the listeners who are not fully understanding about all this, there are recruiters, they used to call them headhunters, who are either working for recruit headhunting firms or they're in-house. Say Apple Computer has its own recruiters in-house. And the job seeker knows that you are not acting on their behalf. You're there. You make your money by filling slots. You're working at the behest of the company. You are not there to support the person. So you start out with at least a strike against you. So the really good recruiter has to redouble his or her efforts to make it clear that while you, of course, you acknowledge that you're getting paid by the employer, but you nonetheless are really ultimately answer to a higher calling, which is to try to help match the really right person with the really right job. And so that in order for you to be authentic and honest in saying that, you've got to really work hard to find somebody who's just magically perfect fit for the job and explain. You say to in other words, if you were, instead of being the recruiter, if you were a candidate, I would say to you, I very carefully selected you. I went to the LinkedIn discussion groups and saw how clever your answers were and the questions about how to use advanced Python. And that's why I encourage you to apply for this job, because this job really requires deep knowledge in that space. And it's really, there's something good about the job and there's something bad about the job. The good thing about the job is you are going to be able to use some deep learning and some new models of layering and artificial intelligence. The bad part is your boss may tend to be a little bit of a micromanager. And if that's going to bother you, maybe this isn't right. So by actually being that honest, even when it's not in your interest, you're going to gain more confidence. So it's two things. It's one, really digging to find a really great person, and then being completely candid, acknowledging that you're getting paid by the other guy, but bending over backwards to let them know the pros and cons of that job. And that will eventually let you be known as an unusually ethical recruiter. Does that make sense?
Yes, totally. And I've seen both the agency house and the in-house side of things. And I try to be authentic, and I tell them the good, bad, and the ugly. But, you know, some candidates are just unwilling to be receptive. And I, is there like a, beyond telling them the good and the bad, is there anything else you would like prompt them with, or a phrase that you feel like resonates well with people, or anything like that?
No, I don't think it's a quick fix like that. And I think sometimes you accept that not there's good reason for people not to trust each other. There is so much BSing in this world, and especially in the world of job seekers. It's been said that a job interview are two people lying to each other. You know, so it you know, you're going to get, you're in an industry, it's not like you're a minister, and even ministers have been known to exactly Catholic priests sleeping with little boys. You know, so we are in an era of rampant distrust, and so you're going to accept that in at least in the short run there's going to be a measure of distrust. And nothing will always work perfectly, but if day in and day out, you don't mind if you have to, it's almost Zen-like, accepting that you're going to lose some people. But if day in and day out, you are, used the term higher authority before, if your ultimate employer is not the company, but it's what is right, you may never be the best, most effective sales guy in the world, which is what a recruiter is, the sales guy, but you'll be good enough. And then you can put your head on the pillow and you tell your children about what you do. And, you know, you have to just, when SH happens, you have to be, you know, resilient. You can't let it bug you. You have to say, okay, is there anything I could have learned from that? I'm going to move on. Give him the finger metaphorically and move on. And that's the way people survive. I've been a career counselor now for 30 years, and I love my work. And I'm successful with the vast majority of my clients, but an occasional client doesn't like me I don't feel good about the way in which they're proceeding, and I just don't think about them for a nanosecond. I just move on. It's like I press delete from them from my life. And that's true of a couple of people in my personal life, too. You know, generally, I try to expect the best in people. But if somebody, I sense this is, a bad, there are bad people. There simply are. And some of them have lovely veneers, and they seem very sweet and nice and friendly. But then when it's expedient, for example, when money's involved, they'll do whatever it takes. Well, you know what? I don't get angry. I just don't forget. I just remember that. And that's the kind of mindset that I think is ultimately the long-term solution to the problem of lack of trust with, especially in your tough industry. Does that make sense?
Totally. I appreciate everything you do, and you are one of my favorite programs on this radio station. Thank you so much.
I appreciate that very much. It's a privilege to do the show. All right, I'll give out the phone number one more last time. If you have a work-related problem, happy to help you. To be honest, the more difficult, the better, because I have been doing this 29 and a half years. I am rarely stumped. At the risk of hubris, there's almost nothing I can't at least help you take a baby step forward. I mean, if you're a drug addict who's curled up in bed all day and you're a high school dropout and you've got an 80 IQ, you're not going to become the CEO of Apple tomorrow. But I can usually, even in those extreme situations, help you. Or you're a zillionaire and still unhappy, miserably unhappy, depressed, going home and vaping your way into oblivion. I can help you too. Whatever your work problem, the harder the better, candidly. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, for what I call a workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And I'm wanting to continue to share a few, before I go back to the phones, of these more of these what I call career stocking stuffers. These are short little tips that that should be able to help you. This is, you know, I've been kind of upbeat about everything. I'm going to be a little bit downer here, but it's I think integrity is everything. I wouldn't be surprised if in a decade or so, many restaurants are going to try to save the cost of real estate and the cost of waiters and the cost of dishwashers, only do delivery using DoorDash, Grubhub, E24. And so where I believe those companies are going to really explore. I'm not asking you to be the driver. The driver makes no money. But working in for the corporate offices for those kind of companies, I'm very optimistic about their future. And especially, you know, because those are completely IT-driven companies. So knowing a lot about, could be recruiting people to be drivers, treating them well, but not so well that you completely lost your profit, using the IT side, I think that these delivery services are the future. I love this Chinese restaurant that's on College Avenue that I go to. It's called Ocean something. I don't remember anymore. Sorry, I couldn't give it a plug. But Great Wall, that's what it is, Great Wall. And the place is always empty. And I'm always afraid they're going to go out of business. And then I walked up to the counter to pay the check, and there are these little electronic devices from DoorDash and E24 and Grubhub. They say they get most of their business from delivery now. And I think, and if that's as a little, you know, a little family-owned Chinese restaurant, it's ubiquitous. And so I think that's a little career tip. Anyway, okay, let's go right to the phones. We only have time for one quick call. So welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hi, my name's Deborah.
Hi, Deborah.
Berkeley. And I'm thinking about retiring. I'm enjoying a job as a buyer at a cultural institution, a store manager, you know, think a small store in a museum or aquarium or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering if you could sort give me sort of the first steps that I would take. I mean, I want to continue to work.
Mm-hmm.
I love my job, but I find, you know, things like commuting, long commute.
It's impossible, I know.
Yeah.
It takes me an hour and a half to get here from Oakland to make this show one way. It's 11 miles. It's crazy. And then you can't take Bart would have taken, to drive to Bart, find a part in the parking spot, and the whole thing. It's forever. And then I got to go from Glen Park. I'd have to take an Uber. It's crazy. Yeah. Commuting is nuts.
Yeah, you got it. So the job gives me a wonderful sense of identity, gives me mm-hmm. a lot of great positive feedback, but between the commute, the young employees, and training them and getting them to do what you want them to do, and just finding people to work, you know, minimum wage, and all of that, I would love to do something that's related that might not necessarily even be paid, but that would be as engaging as creative as it could be, and I really want to start on a plan. Like, what will that be?
Okay, so, I wanted to be clear. So, are you currently working as like a gift shop manager at a museum? Is that what you're doing? Is that what you want to do?
Yes, that's what I'm doing. I don't necessarily need to do that now.
Okay.
No, anymore.
Do you want to get out of the museum world or stay in it?
I would love to stay in it. Yeah, okay. I'd love to stay in it. I've been in art and publishing all my whole life.
Great. So what if I said that, you know, I'm looking at the clock, we only have a few seconds, but some combination of one or more of the following: simply learning how to be a great docent at the museum, working at their various all kinds of crafty stores, maybe part-time working at a cultural boutique, you know, arts boutique thing, and creating your own art if you're an artsy person. Some combination of those. You don't have to do them all at one time, but that mm-hmm. might be the next steps toward, to use your word, retirement. Does that make any sense?
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, that's great. I've done all of that in my past, for sure. So I could definitely step back into that. Maybe those are great places for me to investigate.
Great. Well, thank you very much for calling Work with Marty Nemco.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your show.
You're welcome. And that is the show for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Debbie Kennedy, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Thursday at 7. You can call in for Workover Plus, future-proofing your career. Future robust careers for 2019 and beyond, better ways to train and to succeed on the job. Until then, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.
for the archives of Dr. Marty Nemko's articles, information on his 11 books, including his new one, Careers for Dummies, plus how you can consult privately with Marty, go to martynemko.com. That's MartyNemko.com. And join Marty again next Thursday evening at 7 for Work with Marty Nemko right here on 91.7 KALW San Francisco.